Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, studio, sing it up. Welcome you inside on this 33-degree evening. I'm Jeremy Schilling. We will be joined here on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes by Kyle DeManincourt shortly to talk about the National Basketball Association. We will also, right now, talk about what happened in the world of golf. Ricky Fowler wins over in Abu Dhabi, just a sensational win for him against a great field that included Jordan and Rory. Just really high quality stuff, and I'm really happy for him. And Jason Duffner back in the winner's circle yesterday, winning the Career Builder Challenge in partnership with the Clinton Foundation in a playoff yesterday. And what was really impressive about that to me was how well he putted the ball. Jason Duffner's always been a great ball striker, but all through the week, no matter what course he was playing, he just made stuff, whether it was from 2 feet or from 24 feet. He rolled the rock really well. But the real story for me is Phil Mickelson. I have never seen Phil Mickelson drive it better. I've never seen Phil Mickelson be as confident as he was. He was eighth in driving distance last week. He stepped up there with such gusto. And such confidence, and it's really a good sign to see, because that driver, as Dan and Johnny said yesterday, has been wayward, not been on line. It's been tough to get a handle on and figure out exactly where it was going to go and how he would rebound from there, and what he's done so far in 2016 with that club specifically has been really encouraging to see. And now he goes on this run, starting this week with Torrey, then Phoenix, then Pebble, where he's put up some really good numbers. This is a chance. Just keep this in mind. There's a really good chance Phil Mickelson wins in these next 3 weeks. I'm that confident in him after what I saw last week. And that's something to keep in mind for fantasy players and for just golf fans in general. If he gets a win, I don't see any way. I mean, yes, Davis Love probably is going to go with hottest player, but if he gets a win, I think he'll be on the Ryder Cup team. That's something we'll talk about as time goes on. And for Jason Duffner, look, he hadn't been the same player since the neck injury. He hadn't been the same player since he divorced Amanda. And it's good for him to, A, be back in the right psyche, and, B, just to be playing quality golf and winning again, which was so lost on the sake of him, and so lost in the sake of trying to find the Jason Duffner we know. Finally, Ricky Fowler thinks he can make it a big four now with Jason, Rory, and Jordan. We'll see. I mean, he's got to win a World Golf Championship event. I think that would help his cause. Obviously, a player's is up there, but for Ricky, it's all about the majors. He's got to get that first major. If he can get his first major, then we have a big four. Now, it would help if they could compete against each other, but until then, I think we also have a big three, which is a nice transition to our friend, colleague, and NBA fanatic, Kyle DeManincourt. Who would you say is the biggest three guys in the NBA right now? Who is your big three when it comes to the association?
My Mount Rushmore, I guess you could say, of NBA right now?
Yeah.
You still got to take LeBron James, obviously. I think we're seeing a little bit of the downslope of his career, but, you know, the downslope of his career is still better than most guys' careers. So you still got to take LeBron. He's still the best probably two-way player in the league, in the world. Steph Curry, obviously. with what he's been able to do the last few years, kind of, I guess, changed the way the game is played, not just in the NBA, but if you look in, at college and at high school and the way that kids are trying to emulate him, and I guess the way he handles the ball, shoots the ball, obviously, and his fundamentals are so great. I think that's a lost art. When people look at him, they forget just how fundamentally sound he is. So you got LeBron, you got Steph Curry. I mean, there's a bunch of other guys you can put in the three. I think, you know, right now I'll go with Kevin Durant. I think he looks healthy, finally, which is a great thing, you know, for the league, for the Thunder. He's playing at such a high level right now. I mean, he's so locked in. And the Thunder are kind of, they're flying under the radar a little bit just because of how powerful San Antonio and Golden State are. But, you know, it's a team you don't want to sleep on, especially if Durant, we know Westbrook's going to play like Westbrook always does with, you know, reckless abandon. But if Durant's locked in like he is right now, I mean, they're going to be really tough to beat in the playoffs.
All right. We will get to San Antonio. We will get to Golden State. We have to start with Cleveland. This is a Cavs team that has one mission, and one mission only, is to win a title for LeBron, why he came home. And Cleveland last week fired David Blatt. Nice little 30-11 or whatever that record was. Fired him, said adios, thank you very much. And this was decried in many places as a bad day for the NBA. So a two-part question. A, what were your thoughts on the firing of David Blatt? And B, are you in the camp that believes this is a bad day for the NBA?
Well, I mean, I was shocked, obviously. I'm sure like most people when first found out. I mean, I got a text from my cousin saying, you know, goodbye, David Blatt. And I was like, what are you talking about? And, you know, I obviously checked Twitter and see all the breaking news updates that he was fired. And, you know, I was shocked because, I mean, they're first in the Eastern Conference. They have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference. They have, without question, an easy path to the finals, more, you know, easier than any team in the league. And with everything that, yeah, you could say what you want about Blatt and how he's not using Kevin Love right or the team is disconnected, but a lot of that has to go on the players as well. I mean, you know, disconnect's going to happen every now and then, but you find a way to get through it. I mean, it's, every player is going to have their own ego, their own disconnect, and just if you really care that much about winning a championship, you find a way to get it done. And he definitely took a bad rap first coming in the league. I mean, he wasn't, I guess you could say, LeBron's choice for a head coach. People forget that he was selected to coach before LeBron decided to come back to Cleveland. So he was in a tough situation from the get-go. And even through all that, I mean, look what he did last year. He got to the finals. They took two games, the Warriors, without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. And they were pretty banged up all year. And then this year, to go 30-11 with the best differential in the East and to get fired, I mean, I think definitely it's a black eye on the NBA. Obviously, every team has their own right to get rid of who they want, whenever they want. You know, that's the choice of the GM. It's just odd timing. I know a lot of people said that it was going to happen eventually, but you would think it was almost a boom or bust year where, hey, if they don't win the championship, all right, you move on from David Blatt. Now, midseason, I've never really recall a midseason firing like this when you've got the best team in a conference by far, and I think it's the first time since 1970 when the conferences were first initiated that a team leading the conference fired their head coach.
It truly is stark how well their record is how well their record was and then what the outcome for the coach was. It's interesting though because LeBron basically said, "Look, I told you guys, I was not pleased with the way we've been playing. I was not pleased with the way some of these games went. I wasn't pleased after, and now you kind of know why, because I didn't feel like we were the best team we could be." Have you, as somebody who watches the game with such an acute eye, have you noticed some of the same things LeBron's been noticing?
I mean, you notice a little bit as a fan. You tend not to pay too much attention to that, obviously, because I mean, it's a little thing that, you know, you may not be able to pick up unless you're around the team all the time or, you know, you're closely watching the team. But I think LeBron, what he was saying is, you know, losing to Golden State like they did at home, you know, last week, it kind of set a red flag off. And he can say that there are no red flags, but he said that for that game. But clearly there was, because next thing you know, David Blatt's fired. So I think what's going on today is Cleveland, they know it's a boom or bust year. So they're looking at Golden State and San Antonio and saying, hey, we're not nearly as good as these guys right now. We need to make a change. The problem is, will this change really make them as good as Golden State and San Antonio? That's the question that I'm sure, I mean, I asked myself, and I'm sure everybody else is asking, but you look at the Cleveland team, and a lot of the problems, yeah, Black could have probably used Kevin Love a little bit differently, sure, but a lot of the problems are they have a lot of isolation-type players. I think they run the most isolation plays in the NBA of any team, and I don't know how a new coach could possibly change that. I mean, Kyrie Irving needs the ball. LeBron James needs the ball. Even J.R. Smith, he's got a propensity to shoot shots, you know, at a poor rate. He needs the ball. So I guess it's Tyronn Lue's job somehow to try to find a way to, I guess, move the ball more. He came out today and said he wants to pick up the pace, which is surprising because they have a pretty good pace as far as, you know, what they're doing per game. They are slow as far as their possessions go, but it's not LeBron's style. It never really has been. So I don't know how much this can possibly impact them, but you saw against Chicago the other night, I mean, I'm a Bulls fan. You know that. Everybody knows that. But I thought Cleveland was going to come out and put it on us. I really did. And they looked terrible. They really did. No energy.
And that's a perfect segue because Tyronn Lue basically said, look, we have to run and we're not in physical shape to run. As somebody who was thought of as the handpicked guy by LeBron, whether you believe LeBron had any influence on this or not, do you think that a faster-paced offense is the right move for them, and were you surprised by that comment?
I think what's already happening now is if there's still the blame game. They're still finding a way to blame Black, even though he's not there, saying how the guys aren't in shape. I mean, they need to push the pace. All right, well, the guys aren't in shape. We're almost halfway through the season. Doesn't the players have to take a little of that fault? I mean, look, Black's out the door. There's no more Black excuse anymore. This is supposed to be a new team with a new coach. I don't like what he said with that regard. I think that's on the players to get in shape. I mean, yeah, coaches can push, but at the end of the day, players are the ones going out there playing. The pace thing, I know LeBron came out today and said, hey, that's what coach wants to do. That's what we're going to do. I don't think he's on board with that. I think at his age right now, pushing the pace every possession, that's not going to benefit them, in my opinion, especially with Kyrie's history of injuries. Look, they're not going to be like Golden State. I mean, nobody is. You can't push the pace like that. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. And you know what? With the way the East is, it's going to look great. And then we'll see what happens if they end up getting to the finals.
Talking to Kyle DeMannencourt here about the NBA, let's talk about your Bulls for a second. This is kind of Jimmy Butler's coming out party, I think, on a national stage for how good he is. However, it takes more than one guy. What have you seen out of Derrick Rose on a nightly basis? How close is he to being Derrick Rose? Will he ever be Derrick Rose? And does this team have enough pieces as currently constituted to make a run at the Cavs come NBA Eastern Conference Finals time?
Yeah, you know, Jeremy, it's been a weird year to be a Bulls fan. I mean, it's so hard to figure this team out on a nightly basis. They're wildly inconsistent. They have nights where, like at Cleveland the other night, where they put it on you. I mean, they're 7-3, against the top contenders in both conferences this year, which is the best of any team in the league, and yet they'll come out and they'll lose to the Hornets or they'll lose to the Magic at home. They're hard to figure out. Yes, it is Jimmy Butler's team, in my opinion, and I think, you know, Rose's last few games is starting to realize that. But even so, for the last few games, Rose has looked fantastic. I mean, he's starting to attack like he did before these injuries. He's not shooting threes. He's not jacking up bad shots. I mean, he's in attack mode. And when Derrick Rose is in attack mode like that, that means he's feeling good. He's healthy. So, you know, knock on wood, you want him to string together a bunch of games again before, you know, something else pops up. But they're a weird team to figure out. I mean, losing Noah obviously is a huge blow. I mean, I'm a huge Noah fan. He's one of my top five Bulls of all time. So that was a big blow. I think, you know, you're going to miss his emotion. You're going to miss his size and his energy, obviously. It's tough to tell. I mean, they're going to get Dunleavy back in about a month, so hopefully he's good to go because he's a huge, huge piece of that team. And I think they definitely can challenge Cleveland. Do I think they could win a series in the playoffs right now? No, I don't. I think Toronto is the best challenge for Cleveland at this point. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll get more used to Hoiberg's offense in the second half of the year, and Dunleavy will be the option, the piece that they've been missing, I guess.
You know, you talk about these weird losses, and I forget who of the ESPN crew said it the other night, but they just flat out take games off. I understand taking games off. That sometimes second half of a back-to-back, you're not yourself, you want to conserve whatever. But I've always found it weird that some teams, and the Knicks have been guilty for this for years, even against, even when they weren't good, they would play up to the good teams and then they would still lose the awful teams to the teams that were equivalent in skill to them. Mm-hmm. Why do you think the Bulls have been taking off games as much as they have? Because, look, not that home court matters as much as it does in some other sports, but it is home court in the end, and it's a confidence booster for you that, you know, hey, maybe we can beat Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's tough to really come up with an answer for why they take these nights off. I think it kind of happened a little bit last year towards the end of Tibbs' time. You could see the guys were, I don't know if maybe they had been pushed too hard or they were just mentally just fatigued. It shouldn't be happening right now. Obviously, you have a new coach, you have a new system. You should be, you know, geared up and ready to go. But they are the eighth oldest team in the league. They're trying to, I guess, this year be a little bit more careful with their bodies, unlike the last few years with Tibbs, where, you know, guys would just play through injuries because that was their mantra. You know, this year you see Hoiberg playing 10 guys at times. I mean, they play Etuan Moralin, their fourth-string point guard, and he plays. So I don't know if it's just guys not really getting into a good rhythm on a consistent basis, but, you know, you hope that come All-Star break they can turn that around and be more consistent every single night. But right now there really is no answer, I don't think, as to why they're so inconsistent on a nightly basis.
Talking to Kyle DeMattencourt about the NBA. Before we switch to the West, is there anybody in the East we should talk about besides those two teams?
The East is pretty – there's more parity this year with the East, absolutely. It's not top-heavy like the West, but there's definitely more parity. I mean, I like the way the Celtics are playing. They're gritty. They're well-coached. They're tough. They're still lacking a star, which is why I don't think they're going to go deep into the playoffs. They may give a team in the first round a run for the money, but, you know, I don't think they're going to advance, you know, past that. But it'll be interesting to see if the teams like Washington can get healthy and make a run. The Knicks could even get into that eighth spot, or, I mean, they could even move up to the seventh or sixth if Carmelo's okay. But the East, it's pretty much Cleveland's to win at this point.
Yes, sure seems that way. All right, 10:30 tonight on NBA TV, we have the Warriors and the Spurs. No Tim Duncan in that game, but it seems like we are destined to those two teams eventually ending up in the promised land come May. You know, we talk so much about Steph Curry and why Steph Curry is so good, and we could sit here and talk some more about why Steph Curry is so good. But what's really interesting to me about them is how consistent they've been over these games. Steph had the shin injury. Harrison Barnes missed a game. Clay missed a game. They've actually been able to kind of work this out over such a long period of time with everybody not playing, which is something San Antonio is used to doing because Pop has been resting guys on a consistent basis now for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Warriors, and they're a team everybody wants to watch every night. I mean, it's so much fun. It's different basketball we haven't seen in a while. You look at them, everybody contributes. I mean, Barbosa, he doesn't play a lot, but he contributes. Iguodala contributes. Festus Ezeli contributes. So everybody that comes off that bench, Livingston. I mean, Sean Livingston's had a complete career revival since he's been in Golden State. I mean, they all contribute in a way, and then they're so good with their top three players. I mean, Curry, Thompson, and Green are so elite that it just trickles down to the rest of the team. And let's not, you know, forget here that Steve Kerr just came back. I mean, you're missing your head coach from the year of just coming off winning the championship for almost half the season, and yet you're 40-4. That just speaks volumes. Obviously, Luke Walton did a fantastic job, and he's going to be a highly coveted coach next year for vacancies. But it just speaks volumes to how locked in these players are, how committed they are, and especially given their age and how young a lot of these guys are, that's what makes it even more special. I mean, when Jordan and Pippen and the Bulls did it in 96, I mean, Jordan and Pippen were up there a little bit in age, and, you know, Rodman was too. So being this young like the Warriors are and locking in the way they are, it truly is a special year. And I tell you what, they're on pace to break that Bulls record. It's not going to be easy, but this is the best season we've ever seen since that year.
Yeah, for sure. All right. What about how have the Spurs done this? You know, Kawhi, you know, Charles Barkley has been on record night after night after night saying that Kawhi Leonard is the best player in the association. Let's start there. Is Kawhi Leonard the best player in the National Basketball Association?
You know, he might quietly be the best player in the league. I think what's happening now is you're seeing him. He's creeping up to LeBron status, in my opinion, and eventually he will pass him. His defense, we all know about his defense. I mean, when we guarded LeBron in the finals, he's a terrific, terrific elite defender. But now we're starting to see his offensive game evolve because Pop's giving him the reins more of the team. Because let's face it, it's his team going forward. Eventually Duncan and Manu and Parker are going to retire. So you're seeing his offensive game evolve, and it's really quite special because he goes about his business so quietly. You really don't ever hear anything about Kawhi Leonard, and even in his interviews, it's almost like he's half asleep. I mean, but watching his offense and the way he attacks, his shot has become so much more efficient. I think he's slowly – I'm not going to put him ahead of LeBron just yet. I mean, I know he's creeping up there. I can't put him ahead of LeBron just yet, but Kawhi is – he's even put Kawhi ahead of Kevin Durant at this point. So he's top three, top four for sure.
How does the Spurs team keep doing it?
Greg Popovich, I mean, they create this winning culture every year, and they still have these veteran players that have been through it, that have done it, and they mentor these younger guys, and it just trickles down. I mean, it's such a class act organization that I guess, they're the role model of every team in sports, not just basketball. I mean, every team in sports wants to be like the Spurs and their consistency. And Pop is maybe the best all time at managing his team. He rests them in spots where they need rest. He manages their bodies, the older guys, and he puts pressure on the younger guys to step up and play and evolve. And that's what we're seeing this year. I mean, they're better this year than they've been in their historic run, which is amazing because they've been so great. I mean, they're on pace right now for the highest point differential in NBA history. I mean, that's fantastic when, you know, one of your best players is 37, 38 years old in Tim Duncan. So they're doing something that we've seen it before, but they're doing it at a higher level this year.
I want to make sure we touch on them. The Oklahoma City Thunder, you mentioned them before. Kevin Durant actually, and I'm not sure who tweeted this out today. Maybe it was you, but Durant gave this long quote about how he thinks that they've also been quietly steady, and with everybody focusing on Golden State, they've kind of ended up here under the radar. Is Durant back to where Durant was and under Billy Donovan, do you think that Westbrook and Durant and all the other pieces have a functioning system now that can get them back to the finals?
Well, first, I 100% think that Durant is back to being Kevin Durant. I mean, he's putting up some insane numbers right now. I think he might already have, or he's close to the, 50-90-40 club, 50% from the field, 90 from the line, 40 from three. That elite club that only a certain number of players like Nash and Bird have done. He's attacking the rim. He's rebounding the ball, which for his size, this is what he should be doing. My only issue with the Thunder, and of course you've got maybe the best 1-2 punch in the NBA with the exception of potentially Clay and Curry, but I mean, Durant and Westbrook they're lethal. They're elite, no doubt about it. My worry is that third option. It should be Ibaka. You would think Serge Ibaka is that guy, but his role is really reduced offensively with Durant and Westbrook fully healthy. They got to find a way to get him more involved. I mean, if you look at last night's game against Brooklyn, they lost to Brooklyn. That's a game they should never lose. And if they're trying to catch the top two teams, you can't lose games like that. Ibaka had 10 points. I mean, that's just not good enough to get it done. So they got to find a way to evolve the rest of the offense, use guys like Enes Kanter a little bit more. He's a good offensive player. Find a way to get, you know, Anthony Morrow some more looks from threes. It's going to be a challenge for Donovan, but having those two guys at the top, you know, you're always going to be in the mix as a contender.
I was going to say something, and it escaped me, and I forgot what it was, but let's go here. Kobe, final All-Star game. A, should he have been there? B, does it matter?
Absolutely. I mean, he absolutely should be there. It's the same scenario when MJ retired again, Kobe before he ended his career with Washington, when he was selected to the All-Star game. I absolutely think he's earned the right. He's the second greatest shooting guard of all time. He's put in the time, he's put in the effort, he's done so much for the league. And let's be honest, the fans want to see him. It's what the fans want. That's the whole point of the All-Star game. That's why I think the NBA is the best at this type of event. They make a weekend-long event, and the game itself is entertaining. It's become more entertaining. So he should be there, and I'm sure he'll play limited minutes. It's just to get out there and Dars one more time, and I can't wait to watch it. I hope everybody else feels the same, and it's going to be a special night.
I don't think people realize this. He's averaging 16 points a game. I know he got off to a horrible start, but it seems like his game is maybe picking up just a little bit. He's obviously still shooting 35%, but still seems like he's going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, he's picking his spots. I mean, they're you know, he doesn't play as much in the second half of games. Obviously, in back-to-backs, they really, really, really monitor his minutes. But, you know, he's going out there, and I'm sure he's hurting. I mean, it can't be at his age at this point not be hurting. And he even says he is. So he's just making sure he can go out there and at least give the fans on these road trips, especially where he's going to play for one last time, just give them a little something just to remind them, you know, hey, I'm still Kobe Bryant. And he can still put up some numbers, but, yeah, he's never going to shoot well again. But he's still making a through and all every now and then. So I'm just glad he's healthy, and I really hope that he can stay that way for the rest of the season.
You know, what's interesting, you go through his game logs here. Let's go to the Clippers game, Kings game, January 7th, and then go forward. 28-19-07-8-5-5-15-5-10. So, as you said, he kind of correlates to the minutes that he's playing, you know, picking his spots. I would actually love to see him play in the fourth quarter in the All-Star game, and hey, if he could win the West in the All-Star game, that's probably the best you can hope for as a Kobe fan.
Oh, yeah, it was like when Jordan was in that last All-Star game and he hit that crazy turnaround jumper in the corner over Sean Marion that eventually would have won the game but ended up winning overtime. You would love to see that out of Kobe. It's just a matter of can he stay loose the whole game. I mean, if he comes out early in the third and he's sitting the majority of the rest of the game, it's going to be tough for him to loosen up and get loose, and he may not think it's worth it. But yeah, that's a dream to see Kobe at a game winner in his last All-Star game. So who knows? I mean, we'll see. Maybe he'll get out there in the fourth.
That game coming up Valentine's Day, on Valentine's Day night and on President's Weekend, followed by the Grammys the next night in 3 weeks on TNT. Who right now wins the NBA Finals? Is it Golden State? Which would be a heck of a story, because here's Luke Walton, who gets no credit officially for all of this, but did a sensational job. Now Steve Kerr comes back. If they can win this, it would be one of the most bizarre stories off the court, or I should say on the bench, versus even what's happening with Steph on the court.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's hard to argue with Golden State. Obviously, San Antonio is right there, and hopefully praying that there's no serious injury to anybody going through the rest of the season, because you want to see every team healthy in the playoffs. I mean, that's what the league hopes for. That's what every fan hopes for, but you know, I haven't seen anything that can slow Golden State down. And I mean, even tonight, even if the Spurs somehow did win tonight, people are going to jump to too many conclusions. It's just one game. Just not read into that too much. But I think Golden State, I mean, they're hungry. I mean, they want that repeat. They've been saying it from day one. They had that chip on their shoulder still that they took into the from the offseason, that people thought they got lucky last year and they didn't really belong. So right now, I mean, I have to go Golden State. Cleveland's going to be there. You can't really write them off. They still have the best player in the world, and they have great players around him. So, I mean, I'd say Golden State, but, who knows? The West might wear themselves out. Maybe Cleveland will just win it from lack of fatigue.
Final thing, 20 seconds. Is the NBA Finals the Western Conference Finals?
Oof. At this point, I'd have to say yes. Hard to argue with that, just because you're talking about the two best teams by a far margin in the NBA. But, you know, we got to keep an eye on Cleveland the rest of the season and see what the coaching change does for them.
Alvin Manincourt, fantastic stuff.
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
That's teeing it up. We will see you next Monday for the regular show, and then in 2 weeks for the Sunday sprint. But we'll see you next Monday. Have a great night, everybody.